Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you. You have a friend in me till the end.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. And I have with me, first I'm calling from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. I've got with me today my guest and co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady from ProfitableStorytelling.com. Rhonda, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. I don't know if you just heard my rooster, but he's out here saying hello to you as well. And it's a beautiful day in the Ozarks.
Well, that's fantastic. And we have a great guest that I've been really looking forward to today. So why don't you tell us a little about our guest, John, and I'll see if I can get him unmuted. If you can hear us, Ken, go ahead and raise your hand by hitting 1 on your keypad so that I can make sure I find you in the switchboard.
Right. And there he is. I just saw his hand pop up. Excellent. So anyway, well, Ken is this really interesting person. He and I have a history. He is somebody who has really transformed his life, and he'll tell you more of his story as we go through the call. But here's what's exciting. I mean, I love it when we can bring some big names and uber well-known people to you, but I also love it when we can bring you somebody who is just like somebody just like you, who's just a guy who is wanting to make some great things happen, wanting to change his life and build his dream. And what's really funny, I talked to him last week, and after he was telling me some things that happened, I said, I think I would call this conversation Ken Jensen's Wild Ride, because just the things that he has been, that have been showing up in his life and that have been happening are really, truly very phenomenal and synchronistic types of events. And you're going to love how he's talking about mindset and the power of belief and the power of changing your life. So that's a little bit of the history with him. And he has written a book that's called It Takes Guts to Be Me. He is somebody who has overcome bipolar disorder. And he has overcome it not with scores of pills, but after many, many, many months of searching through finding natural remedies. And he's used that as a springboard. He's not just known as this some guy who overcame bipolar disorder. He's really going on to find phenomenal deals and things that just fall in his lap. So, Ken, we're really, really excited to have you here on the show today.
I'm glad to be here, Rhonda. Nice to meet you, Gina.
Nice to meet you as well. So why don't you give us the details of your story?
All right. Well, I'm a former Marine. I'm a combat vet out of the Gulf War. And I've had bipolar probably all of my life, but it took me out of life itself in my late 20s. It started showing its presence, and as soon as we were able to label what was going wrong with me, because I didn't know until then, it just got progressively worse, and everything the doctors tried to do to help me, which pretty much consisted of nothing but jamming a ton of pills through me, was worsening the illness and destroying my physical health on top of it. It was a loss. There was no gain. In the end, I was handed a death sentence by my final doctor, who was the fifth, and he told me, you have my blessing, do anything you think might work, because it really doesn't matter at this point, and psychiatry cannot help you. We've proven that beyond a shadow of a doubt. So with a mind that didn't even work, I wasn't even always 100% sure what was real. It wasn't psychosis, but it was dissociation. You're just not quite all the way connected to what's going on.
Right.
I started doing research. I don't know how I pulled it off. Some part of me still functioned enough. And through trial and error, getting ripped off a lot and experimenting on my own self, I found some pieces of the puzzle that were missing that provide good health. They would do so for anybody. But in my case, I needed a big hand with repairing my mind and body. And as I did that, I looked into the more ethereal parts of my nature. I called it the software. First I fixed the hardware, then I looked into the software. I had a feeling that me, all by my lonesome, was part of the problem with the rest of me. And it turned out I was right. And I looked into why I thought like I did, why I believed what I did, why I looked at anything in life like I did, and how it might be contributing to my poor health. That's a connection most people don't make. And they don't believe it when you tell it to them how powerful it is, because it's just not something taught or widely accepted. Well, I got all of my health back. I turned it into a book. The history Rhonda and I had is, well, it was fun. We argued. I tell people she pulled this story out of my head with a pickaxe. We had very colorful conversations back and forth as she convinced me in my language that I did indeed have a story that I didn't believe her existed. And thankfully, she was able to come down to my level where I was at that time and talk to me in my terms and made me comfortable enough to believe she was a guy I could trust. And we pulled that story together. That became my book. It became my bipolar business. I consult with people and help them do what I do. I give away my entire system for free online if people have it in them in a proper support system. They don't even need me. If they do, I'm to be had that way. And then through the process of healing my mind and body and changing my outlook on life, life changed. Then stuff started happening that I couldn't even believe it as it was happening. It was so good. That continues on now. I've gone on to larger and larger business creations. My peer group has risen in, how do you put it? Well, stature among one thing. I hang out with a lot of millionaires now to learn from them. And they treat me as an equal, and they know I'm the young kid on the block, and they want to teach me because they know I suck it up. I'm involved in a lot of things, and a lot of things have happened to me that as they're happening or looking back, you know, moments or days later, I can't believe they just took place. But I work at it. I bring these things to me, and I know that. I just don't always know what they're going to be when they hit. And I'm a guy that likes surprises and adventure, and hopefully, you know, in positive fashion. And it just keeps steamrolling over me. And now it's my job to keep up. I have a wife and four kids. I lost them due to my illness. We were separated. We almost got divorced. And about 3 or 4 years later, I got them back, got us into a nice house, and started rebuilding all that I had lost from the illness. The illness stripped me of a three-story house, two brand-new cars, my final job, all my money, my health, my life. I was dead. I was pronounced dead. I came out of it and was in a coma for 2 weeks, lost my marriage, I lost everything. I became a felon somewhere in the middle, so I lost some of my freedom for a bit. I have overcome all of that and replaced all the parts worth replacing, and now I've not only fought my way up from back to zero, I've rocketed on to higher points I've never attained before, and now I finally have a level of satisfaction I know I've been looking for all my life. I'm not done. The work's hard, and I have to keep driving hard to keep up with it and to hold up my end with the people who are now my partners. But this pleases me. It's the kind of challenge I've been waiting for my whole life. That's my story.
Wow, that's incredible. I have a cousin who is bipolar. He's a couple years older than me. And during my 10-year-long illness, I was basically helping to take care of him long distance, in and out of hospitals and in and out of courts because he kept getting arrested for a variety of different things. And so having had experience for the last 16 years with someone with bipolar, I know what that particular condition can really do to completely strip your life away from you, because that's really what it does.
Always.
And I am so amazed and fascinated by your ability to overcome all of that.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, the illness, there's a lot of energy wrapped up into it. It doesn't matter if you're the one who has it or you're the one supporting that person. Either way, everyone suffers.
It's
such a high-energy illness, and it just is all-consumptive, and it's destructive. Oh, my goodness, it's one of the most destructive things that could happen to a family.
Yeah. I mean, my illness was no piece of cake or walk in the park either, but boy, I'd choose it over bipolar any day of any week.
Right, because you have all that energy, but you have no logic.
You got it.
It's nothing but a bag of surprises, and all of them are bad.
You got it. And every day is some new surprise. Sometimes bigger than the day before, sometimes maybe not as big, but always a new one.
Right.
It's
so how were you able to overcome all of that?
Okay. The key ended up being nutrition more than anything.
Really?
They don't know why. The people that I ended up working with that actually had gave me the biggest bang for my buck, you could say, they don't even know why. But as far as they can tell right now, and massive global research is being done around the world using these people's products as the base, in some cases, in an attempt to disprove them, and it keeps backfiring on the researchers as they prove the company right, which is awesome. Bipolar people either have a greater need on a massive scale for nutrients compared to the regular person, or we have a greater inability to absorb them as well. The answer in either direction is tons of nutrients. They don't even know themselves which way it goes, and scientists that are interested in this haven't been able to pin it down. It will even overcome genetic flaws. You'll hear often that bipolar can be genetic. It can also just be triggered. Life can just hit you hard enough. And then what I learned, like what I learned that I was missing in my life, anybody can deplete these things, and bipolar can potentially be the result. So it's not just genetic. Either way, the nutrient bath can overcome it. It can. Now, I've met with these people and even spoken on stage at mental health conventions with them, and they agree with me. There's other parts missing that they're just one. They're an awesome big block, and then there's people like me that realize even more has to be looked at from there. You can drive this illness. It's tricky. It's so convoluted. What's that? Rhonda, you're an author. What's that knot? That knot the one emperor just cut in half with a sword. It's that thing. It's just all roped in on itself. You can't tell where it starts or ends. Gordian knot.
Yeah.
It's like that. And the key thing beyond the nutrition, I mean, just start there, I would tell people. But the key thing is bipolar is a result of everything you're doing wrong or missing in your life. And where do you even begin? Because when you find one problem, it can be fed by another. If you go back up to deal with that, you find it's in place because of yet another problem. And it's tricky to sort through all of that mesh to find out where you can actually get a toehold and start beating the whole thing. But it can be done.
Wow.
So here's something that's really interesting with Ken and how you had the wherewithal to do this. I even don't know, because most of the folks I've met with have bipolar disorder. As far as keeping to a task with the tenacity, you know, like a dog going after his favorite bone, to research and try to figure this stuff out, the fact that you even had it in you to do that is pretty remarkable. And that is, to me, that's also, of course, a huge part of what not only brings about your recovery, but just is of your whole aspect of mindset, that if you want to accomplish something, you are not going to let go. You left no stone unturned. You researched and researched. You found nothing and nothing and a little more of nothing with a side of nothing and a glass of nothing beside it for the longest time before you ever figured this stuff out. And that's what's really important. A lot of people, even who have don't have bipolar disorder, most people, you know, Google search for 2 minutes, and if you can't find it, oh, I guess it's too hard. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I honestly don't know beyond personal fortitude what drove me onward, because, like I said, when I did this, my mind didn't work. I was so dissociative. I was connected enough to reality that I could get through my day, but I had no depth to my understanding of anything my senses shared with me. So I could tell you, if somebody told me the pen was on the table, I could identify where the table was. I'd see the pen. I could pick it up. If you stopped me and said, tell me about the table, I had nothing for you. I know that it's the table. I can't tell you what it's made of, how it's made, what its purpose is. I'd look at the floor in my parents' house where I ended up, and I'd walk across the floor and not quite understand its whole deal, its purpose, how it was holding me up. I knew there was a basement underneath, I would think. I wasn't even always sure of that. And I would be frustrated because that's the tricky part to this, one of them anyway. Part of you knows better. You're aware that you're missing a part of the puzzle. You can feel it. You know you should know more, and you don't know how to access it. It is frustrating beyond words. It's almost like the greater part of you is trapped inside the madness that is the outer expression of the bipolar. So from there is where I started trying to do research, and it's interesting. As a business, this has proved to be a problem for me. Whether I felt it or not, and I didn't, I had some kind of strength a lot of people don't seem to have. The way I can help people get beyond that who can't fight as hard as I did is the fact that I lay out the whole system for free now. It's how I sleep well at night. I give it all away, and if they've got the kind of help that I had with the family or anybody, they stand a chance at just following what I write and getting through it. But yeah, it's tricky, and bipolar makes you you can't focus. I mean, it does dozens and dozens and dozens of bad things to you, but it makes you unable to focus. And it makes you disastrously brilliant. You're so smart, but you run in different directions that you shouldn't, and you take it right down to the end of the road. You hit the wall at the dead end, and you know it can convince you that you should stop. You always think you're right if that's the mood you're in, or if you're on the other side of the coin, if you're depressed, you just won't try. Or if you're in the middle in zombie land with dissociation, you're just floating. You don't know what to do. So I've also realized, like we had discussed, Rhonda, it's why I'm more than just bipolar. It's why my life has become like it is. The bipolar was a wake-up call for me to just get my act together and do better. And people should take that as good news, because I believe there's a lot of reasons why bipolar can be in a person, but I believe they can all be overcome if the want's deep enough. And that's kind of where this question had started from. I was desperate enough to give everything a try, even with a mind that wasn't even there, and I didn't feel any strength. I'm a Marine, I'm a guy, you know, what have you. I didn't feel any of that. I was a shell when I began this. When my doctor said, you're going to die, he said, based on your personal actions, what this illness causes you to do, you're going to die probably within the next 6 months, guaranteed, from something that this illness causes you to do. Because we talked very straight. I said, don't hide anything from me. And I agreed with him. And from that point, I got hit with such a desperation that drove me. That drove me onward despite anything. And this, so that just comes down to like anything. Rhonda, you teach these things. I'll bet you do too, Gina. You got to want something bad enough or you're just not going to do it.
Oh, yeah, that's so true in anything in life or business.
Exactly.
This and you got to have a why for it, or you don't have something that's going to keep you going every single day.
You do. Right. And then when I got better from the illness, and I should also add, that was practically a fluke. I mean, in a way, I was not looking to get better from the illness. I used to go to bed at night praying to God, give me 15 minutes of peace. Just give me 15 minutes where no symptoms attack me. That is all I'll need to bolster the strength to handle the other 23 hours and 45 minutes of nightmare that is my day-to-day life. Mm. I wasn't looking to cure bipolar or anything. I just wanted a little bit of relief, and I'd have been ecstatic to have it. It became all this so much more.
Wow. Well, I know when my cousin was first diagnosed with bipolar, before that, he had been diagnosed with an adult form of ADD or ADHD. And pretty much all his life, he really was the epitome of someone living with ADD. They put him on a drug for ADD, and the name of the drug is escaping me, but I'm sure it'll come to me before the end of the show. And
Ritalin?
What the doctor didn't know, it wasn't Ritalin, I can't remember what the name of it was.
They have so many.
The doctor didn't know at the time was that my cousin was also smoking marijuana. And apparently this drug being used at the same time as someone smoking marijuana causes bipolar to occur. And it,
oh, yeah.
About a year after we learned about the illness within my cousin, there was a 60-minute special on that had over 20 people on the show who were all examples of the same exact thing. They were diagnosed as adults with ADD, put on the same drug. They were also smoking marijuana that the doctors knew nothing about. And every one of these people ended up with bipolar. How does someone get bipolar? Is this something that just occurs, or are there other ways of catching bipolar, so to speak?
Well, as far as the marijuana, I get asked that a lot, or even argued to, about using marijuana while bipolar. When I found out I had bipolar, it was after my first major panic attack. That thing was incredibly bad. That was Satan sitting in your lap, stroking your face with razor blades bad. I mean, I never knew you could experience fear like that. I'd lived through missile attacks in the war. I've been as a person in a lot of places nobody should be, and survived things I should not have walked out of, and, you know, whether in the Marines or not, it's just been a crazy ride, like Rhonda said. Nothing scared me like my first major panic attack, and I didn't know what it was. I thought I was going insane, and I was riddled with terror at the same time, and I had a sensation in my chest like I was falling into an impossible black hole that was in my chest, and it was infinite. As I fell through it, it was deep beyond explanation, and I was eternally falling into myself. I could feel me falling, and yet I could still feel me in the room. That's before my limbs went numb, and I was racked with terror and conscious. As the fear got even bigger, I was begging God, screaming, to just go make me go unconscious, pass out. I don't need to know this is happening. And I couldn't pass out. When they hooked me up, when the ambulance finally arrived, and they hooked me up to the monitor, before I turned my eyes away, the numbers were 200 and change, over 200 and change, and both of them were rising as I watched, rapidly. I knew I was going to watch digitally my heart explode. So I turned my eyes away because I didn't want to see myself die with numbered representation. The whole show went on, and they just tranquilized me to my gills until finally at the ER, they refused to put any more in me. My heart rate was still climbing, and the doc said, I give him any more, he's going to die. And they said, Doc, what's it matter? He's going to have a heart attack anyway. I heard them say that, and then I was conscious still. I said, yeah, who cares? Do something. They shot something at me, and I passed out. I never knew what it was. Anyway, all of that was after, 2 days prior, I had been smoking weed. And this is after, 8 or 9 years of smoking weed. And I normally smoked weed because I was stressed. I started falling off the wagon secretly because I had been sober for 7 years after leaving the Marine Corps. I came out of the Marine Corps a very accomplished alcoholic. A lot of Marines do. And I was on another level. And I went back to drinking to try to stop these feelings in my body that I couldn't understand, and then this panic attack came later. Very first doctor I went to, I got checked out physically first. That doctor said, you're healthy as a bear. You're absolutely physically the healthiest person I got, because no matter what I did to myself, I lifted weights and hiked. I had very physical jobs. I was in great shape. The psychiatrist, first thing he said, he asked me if I smoked a lot of weed. I said, yes. You smoke it for stress? I said, yes. And he was like a hippie. I loved him. He was funny. He said, you're going to love this. Your weed is causing your bipolar. I was like, oh, that's just spiffy. And he goes, I know. It sucks. You got to quit weed. And he gave me a book. And he said, look at the bottom of the list, a book about bipolar. Very last item on the list. THC is an exacerbator of bipolar symptoms. Now, a lot of people that are bipolar, either because of the stress or the mania, I'm assuming, mostly the high energy parts of the illness. They smoke the weed to mellow out.
Yeah.
And they don't realize they are adding to their problems. And this is one key thing I realized about my illness, and anybody with bipolar, or for that matter, anybody who's not as healthy as, quote unquote, a healthy person. Your body is in a war with something. It needs all the help it can get. Anything you put down the hatch that is not a nutrient is the enemy, and it is hurting you and making the illness stronger, whatever the illness. When you're bipolar in particular, since your illness is so vicious and it has the ability to hurt everyone around you that you care about, not to mention anyone innocent on the street, depending on where the illness might be taking you, you are responsible to take better care of yourself than everybody else, even other sick people with other illnesses. You don't have a choice. And that brings another step into it that I learned, that, and this is a hard one. It takes time to get your head around when you're healing. You have to take responsibility for your life. And again, this shouldn't, it's hard. It's impossibly hard, almost. It's very, very hard, but not impossible. But if you have bipolar, you should take that as good news. If you can get the strength, and I can teach you how, to take responsibility for your life, you can grapple with this thing and get it under control. Maybe you don't even beat it entirely. Maybe you have other circumstances that I didn't. But I was in very, very, very bad shape from bipolar, so you stand a pretty good chance of getting, you know, some kind of well if you do what I did. But you got to own up to what you're doing wrong in your life and start changing. I tell people bipolar, in one way, is nothing more than the loudest signal possibly generated by your body that you are screwing up. This doesn't mean it's intentional. It's just a generic, you're screwing something up. That's your body going, hey, 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 you got to take a look at something, everything. You're doing everything wrong.
Wow.
And then that brings in the Gordian knot. It's
right.
Everything. That's what why my treatment's
right.
Holistic. And it's why holistic treatments work so well on any disease. It's why my
yes.
system applied to anybody's life will give them some sort of improvement. I guarantee that. Don't know what, don't know how much. But if you did what I did, if you weren't doing certain parts of it now, your day is going to go a little bit better. If you're sick, your day could go a lot better. But it's everything, everything that you do, see, hear, think, and believe in a day, it all is involved and it all feeds all the other parts. You got to start picking apart the whole scene and finding out where the holes are, where the mistakes are being made, and righting those wrongs. As you move along, you build up steam, it compounds, so synergy starts taking place.
And, as you know, this show is all about relationship marketing. And I'm assuming that as you started figuring out the answers and wrote the book and whatnot, that you use relationship marketing to grow this business. Is that a correct assumption?
Relationship? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, relationship, everything. I'm Cripes, I love networking. I didn't know how much I liked it until Rhonda and others told me I should do it or some version of it. And you know, different ways I was taught to do it. You can't do anything without everybody else. You know,
yeah,
you just can't. We need somebody else to help us.
I
believe heavily in mentors. Heavily, heavily, heavily. Whether you meet them in face, talk to them on the phone, or read about something they said in a book. I wouldn't have any of this without Rhonda. I mean, we flat out argued. I didn't believe her. I did not believe her that I knew what I knew. And she'd holler at me, and we were, oh, my goodness. It was like hanging out with one of my guys. It was awesome because I could appreciate what she was trying to do, and I had paid her to do it, but I didn't believe her anyway. And she's like, oh, you idiot. It's you got to – oh, my God, what do I got to tell you? and that was my first relationship marketing. But that was the cork. That was the cork. Rhonda helped me gain that belief in myself for this whole other part of my life. And she's been with me ever since, which I'm very grateful for.
What's really interesting about the way you talk about that, Ken – Gina, you know how often we've talked about speaking the language of your target audience and speaking right to that one person.
I was afraid of offending Rhonda, and it was slowing me down.
Now, here's what's funny. You know, I know that I show up as a pretty clean customer and, you know, whatever. And yet with Ken, here's this ex-Marine. I knew I had never met him. I have never met him in person still. I can't really do that. That he was this big, very well-built, really strong guy, you know, like if we were in the same room, if he just felt like it probably could crush anybody pretty easily, type of a big guy, a big, strong guy. And I knew that if I was going to reach him at all, I really had to speak his language. So I'm like, okay, so how do I become the mindset of the Marine and talk to this guy? Which is something that I was not. So, you know, I did everything possible to put myself in that place and just deal with him. And, yeah, sometimes I did kind of holler at him, which is not typically a client experience of working with
No, I wouldn't think.
Speaking, yelling people, you know, it's not really my method. But with him, it was going to be, sometimes it was the only way to get through the thick skull and to get to those 6 or 8 inches between the ears, you know, was to really become somebody that he could relate to.
Yeah, I had a fear once they the company we were working with partnered me with Rhonda, and I got to know her and did a little research on her, you know, whatever I found out about her. My first thought was like, this person's too tame. My story is just, you know, I don't know, people that know me don't even want to hear different parts of it when I feel in an entertaining fashion to share freely, because I love shocking people with my stories. And I was like, this isn't going to work. This lady's going to have a coronary listening to me, or whatever. It's going to be so offensive. I didn't even feel comfortable sharing. Then I didn't even feel comfortable writing the book. But yeah, Rhonda matched me there, and I'm making an assumption, but I don't believe she handles most of her clients
No.
the way she handled me. But if she didn't, the book never would have got written. So,
right.
But yeah, it's really incredible, because that. As you said, with relationship marketing, Gina, that was the kickoff. That was the kickoff. So I look for help everywhere I can. I'm always on like a dual mission. You got to be wide open and receptive, but not naive at the same time. And you got to keep your own enthusiasm under control. You have to show great enthusiasm, but not let it overrun your logic or ration in different times, which, you know, that hasn't always been possible for me. So I make a lot of mistakes as I move forward, but I've also learned to take it easy on myself. It's part of what I teach for people to overcome bipolar. Just take it easy. You're somewhere and you're fighting to get out. So don't rate your actions too harshly. Just keep moving forward. And that's the interesting thing. My system applies in a greater sense to just moving through life well. I didn't see that coming. I just wanted to not be having my symptoms. But, yeah, I got the hang of listening to mentors. I'd read a lot of great books over the years by other accomplished people on how to think and how to do things right. And it's interesting. I went back to a lot of those books that I thought were fluff. I mean, up until my 20s and even early 30s, I was harsh in just about every way. I was very harsh, and it was limiting me. And for me to mellow out and be a better person made me feel weak to even think of it, and I'd always been in harsh environments. I'd been on jobs where the only reason I was the boss was because I could kick the crap out of anybody under me, because that's who you worked with. They wouldn't respect you if you couldn't physically threaten them, and then the job wouldn't get done, then I might be facing a boss who either was that much more than I was, or he'd just fire me. He's like, make them do it somehow. I had a number of jobs like that. So that was very hard for me to break free from, because I had to reinvent myself. That is scary. You have to let go of everything you think you are. But again, that's good news. A lot of what's wrong in anyone's life is they've put it there, and they believe it must be so. You're free to change. That doesn't mean you just walk away and up and go into a new life, but it shows that the potential's there, the possibility's there, and it is not impossible. You can do it. And Rhonda helped me make that change. She was one of the very first people to do it, to help me start, you know, I'm still me in some of the fun ways that I appreciate, don't openly share with everyone, and I don't plan on letting them completely go, because I dig certain parts of me. But most of it had to either be shelved or gotten rid of if I was ever to better my life. And it's a very scary transition, but I can tell you it is one that's very fun to do when you start getting the hang of it. You learn how to hang on to whatever parts of you that make you interesting, and yet better yourself and quiet the parts of you that need to be quieted so you can move forward. It's exciting.
Absolutely. Let me pause for a moment, and I want to tell people where they can find you, Ken, and then I'm going to ask you something else here that you told me the other day, if you're willing to share it. So first of all, let me mention that your book is, this is Ken Jensen that we're talking about, J-E-N-S-E-N, if you're listening on audio only. And His book is called It Takes Guts to Be Me, and you can click on the image of that book right here in the show notes and find it, or you can certainly go to Amazon or wherever. And the website that you can find Ken is also in our show notes, but it is called bipolar-disorder-survivor.com. And so we're really happy to have you here on Relationship Marketing 101. Now, Ken, if you're willing, you mentioned to me about a video that you made that was on YouTube that led to something really cool happening to you. Would you share that with us?
Oh, yeah, I'd be glad to. Okay. I was told some time back to make a bunch of videos that draws people to you better than anything else on the Internet. So I did so. I did it for 2 years, maybe a little over 2 years. I was very self-conscious, so I went out in the woods where nobody could bother me. And I've always been a big outdoors guy. So I just walked around with my handheld video camera, and I would just pick one topic that had to do with beating bipolar, and I'd talk about it. And I put all these videos online, and I got better at doing it over the years, but there's almost 50 of them on YouTube now, and I've got them all on my website as well if people want to look. You can see how I transformed over the years. One of the videos, I did a talk on creativity, the link between bipolar and creativity, and that brings up an interesting point too. There's parts of bipolar that are incredibly good, but the rest of bipolar makes you mishandle those good parts. Again, that's another reason for hope. Some of what's wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just being mishandled by all the rest of you. So keep that in mind. Now, I was talking about that in this video about creativity. A lot of people, like me, I've had 30 jobs. I was good at all of them. I lied my way into most of them about a resume that only existed in fantasy land. And I found out I could learn anything. Give me about a week, I'll figure the job out. And it applied to any industry I cared to try. So I spoke about this, about how some people are so creative they can't fit in with the rest of society, and they think they're a lunatic, or they think they're just a problem child, or they're viewed that way. And I tell them, no, it's you're on to something. It's just not being moved through your day quite right. I did a talk on that, and a crew in Brooklyn, a production team, they're called C-Think Films, and they're at cthink.com. I have no connection to them other than they filmed me. They emailed me and said, we like your video. We're doing a movie, a documentary about bipolar, interviewing a bunch of people. Would you like to be in it? I said, sure, I'd love to. And 4 days later, they drove up from Brooklyn, about two and a half hours away, and they spent 5 hours in my house filming me, asking me absolutely everything they could think of about bipolar. And it turned out the producer, a younger guy, I'm guessing somewhere around 30, he had someone in his life that he cared about who was bipolar, but he didn't know what that meant. And he moved on without this person, and he found out later what that person was up against, and he felt like he should have done more. He didn't know what he was up against back then. So this was his way of paying back for that, as he saw it. And they interviewed me for five hours. And that movie's going to be done somewhere in the next year. He said they should have that all wrapped up. That company's already got 4 award-winning films that has placed well in festivals all around the globe. And it was just such a fascinating experience for me. A year ago, I got led to a place. Oh, as a matter of fact, I made a local Cablevision appearance, and I was interviewed, and people called in, and I was handed a VHS copy of that show, and I wanted to put everything online, and like, how do I get it off of this tape? I went to what's called a media center. It's kind of like a little mini Hollywood, and they converted the tape for me to DVD so I could load it onto my computer. And then I got led into this whole production world. I got put in a few commercials that were on CNN. And that was, I mean, and like I said, like Rhonda was saying earlier, things just kind of fall in my lap that are very interesting. I helped build the largest art gallery in my county with over $1 million worth of art hanging on the walls. We built the first rooftop garden on a building in our county, which drew a professor up from Manhattan to give a seminar to a room full of people. I helped cater that because it was our space, so we kind of like hosted all kinds of things just to get people into the art gallery. And that's where I met my future partner for the business I'm in now. And this has been the way. I told Rhonda, I would have to write a book about the last year alone to fully explain everything that has happened to me, because it's so far-flung, coming from so many directions. There's no way to tell a piece of it almost and make any sense to how I got here. And I manifested this. This is the kind of life I want. It's been fascinating.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
I don't know what the movie's going to be called yet. They hadn't decided that, but it'll be on my website when the time comes. I'll make a lot of noise about it.
Oh, yeah. I will be sure to post it here. Of course, it's a little way out, but I'll make sure that it gets posted on the Blog Talk site. Since you've been one of our guests, it'll be exciting to put that up. So, Gina, isn't this an incredible story about just, you know, transforming your life and putting yourself in the position for things to happen and being open? If Ken had just said, I'm just here to make a videotape into a DVD and that's it, whatever, a lot of other things wouldn't have happened.
Absolutely.
You had to take action at putting up.
Fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because here's another tip. I learned I couldn't do this all myself, but when I fought the illness, that's a reverse of what I just said. When I fought the illness, and I tell this to everybody, you have to become incredibly selfish. Don't worry about anything else. To the best of your ability and within reason, we all have different circumstances, but you got to be all about you, because you're not going to be any good to anyone else till you get you back on track. Once you get back on track and you've got some kind of foundation, now you got to be about other people to keep moving forward.
And that applies not just to overcoming bipolar. It applies
right.
to any illness you're trying to overcome.
Yes, or any life
right.
problem. I mean, if you get,
yeah.
I tell people it's like the airline instruction card. You put the gas mask, oxygen mask on you first, then your kid. If you air up the kid first and you pass up, now you have a well-oxygenated kid with nobody to guide him. You got to breathe first and take care of your child. It's the same way with overcoming these really bad life situations. But once underway, then you look for the captain. Okay, we're all aired up. Now what? So I got aired up, and I figured out I had to find a way to propel myself forward. Once I got healthy, I realized there was so much more I wanted in life. There was so much I had mishandled, way too much time spent just killing time, doing drugs, drinking, or doing good things, but they didn't lead to what I was really searching for. I realized a lot of my really good activities were I was trying to find out what to do with my energy and my talents. And as much as I enjoyed different things, they kind of rang hollow the older I got. So I realized, as bad as I wanted success, me wanting it was not going to help me work late at night or do something when I had, you know, if I had the option, well, I could go to bed now, or I could stay up another 15 minutes and work on that website. I'm going to bed. If it was just me, I'd go to bed. So, and this is in the movie. This will be, I hope they put it in the movie. They filmed it. I have a picture of my wife's feet from the ankles down, and it is stuck on my desk over my computer. And the film crew said, what's that? I said, that's my wife's feet. That's, I worship at them. I said, that's the reason I work so hard. You know, it's you know, kind of a Ken way of saying, you know, this is my inspiration. Before my wife and I got back together, we have one biological son and three stepchildren, and I realized that no matter what, whether I got her back or not, it was incredibly important to me that she and those kids were okay, even if she got with another man, which she did for a while we were separated, which was, you know, that was life. That's totally understandable. I still, even with my limited funds, she got the lion's share, because I had to know for me that I was doing everything I could to take care of her, because I had promised her once that I would. That promise pushed me through a lot over the years. Our own ups and downs, even while we were separated, but then as we got back together, and we got back together because she saw the wellness come back into my life, she saw sanity return, she saw my plans and heard about them, and she could see the results where they were working. And she believed in me again, as she once did before I had completely bottomed out. So I do everything I do because this is how I want my life to be. But she's what drives or pulls me through it, her and the kids. You have to be responsible. You have to be accountable. Got to be accountable to somebody. In my case, I'm accountable to more people than just that. And that's what it takes to let me operate at this level of activity, because it's hard. This all sounds great, and it's fun, and I love it, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I want more, but it is hard. And I haven't got all the answers I need yet, and I'm scrambling in a few areas against the clock, and yet it keeps working. And I've grown to have faith in myself that even when it's scary or unsure when I make a move, I just keep getting the proof that it'll work out. I have to be smart about it and everything, but it just simply keeps working out.
So you just said a whole lot in those few paragraphs of what you just said. So let me break this apart a little bit.
Okay.
One of the big things that you said is you've got to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, no one else is going to believe in you either. And it really has to start with that belief in yourself, knowing that you are what it is you're trying to achieve already. Then the other thing you said, exactly. Then the other thing you said is that once you believe in yourself, now you've got to have a why. Because it is going to feel like work. It is going to be time consuming. And without that why, it's really easy to give up.
Yep.
And it's a lot easier to give up than it is to try and keep going. And for each person, that why is going to be different. Like you, my why is my husband. When we first met, which was just 20 years ago last Friday, when we first met, we had talked a lot in the first few weeks even about having a life together where I would have my legal career. When we got to the point where we wanted to have kids, I would get pregnant, have the baby, then he would be staying home, taking care of the house, taking care of the kids, and I would continue my legal career. And ever since that time, 20 years ago, I really have always looked at it as my responsibility to make sure that money came in and that he wasn't required to be at work doing things. Now, the universe had a few other plans in store for me, so okay, I'm not still out there with my legal career today, but that commitment I made to him so that he wouldn't ever have to work, so that he could stay home and do what he wanted to do and take care of the kids and whatnot, that never changed. Maybe he just has a dog today and not a kid, because we never did have kids because of the illness, but I still have him as my why. Everything I do is to improve his life and allow him to have the things that I promised to him years and years ago. And for you, it's your wife and your kids. For somebody else, it might be a completely different type of thing. I have someone in one of my coaching programs who's in his late 70s. His wife is in her late 70s. They have a daughter who's in her early 40s who has Down syndrome. And this girl will never, ever be able to live on her own. And he and his wife, in their late 70s, are so terribly concerned over what to do when they pass on to make sure that she still has someone there to care for her. And so he's building a business right now, not just to help her, but this business needs to raise at least $3 million before he leaves this earth so that there can be a trust fund set up for her and a group of her friends who can all live together in a way that can complement one another so that they can actually live a life without their parents there. And that's a big why for him. He does so much more because of that than he ever would without it. So anybody who's really trying to see some results of whatever kind, whether it's overcoming health issues, building a business, whatever, you gotta have that why. And it better be damn big, or when the going gets tough, the tough are not going to get going, they're going to leave.
Yep.
Right? And then the other thing that you said is, once you believe in yourself, once you've got that why, you and I both had something that most people don't have, and that is a support group. For you, your wife and kids really were your supporters at times. For me, my husband has been my biggest supporter and biggest advocate for the last 20 years. And in overcoming the death sentence imposed on me by my doctors, there is no way in hell that I would have gotten through what I did to really save my life and go on to live an unbelievable life without my husband being right there supporting me the whole way. There were lots of tears in those 4.5 months that I went through my transformation. And in the 10-year illness, oh my goodness, I don't know what I would have done without him being right there by my side.
Right.
For you, you had your parents, or your wife and your kids. But everybody has to have somebody as a support group. And if it's not your family, then find one. How else can somebody go out and find a support person, Ken?
Well, there's groups. There's a lot of support groups. I mean, one of the easiest ways is to punch in whatever your problem is to Google and add to it support groups. That is a key. That is a key problem for me that I get asked about by people. Bipolar in particular, it burns everyone out. A lot of people have lost their support groups.
It does.
It just eats up families. You lose your job. They don't have any money. A lot of people are forced to depend on whatever the system has in place, and that's usually not that great.
No,
but if you can find an advocacy group where you're free to take things the way you want, at least you're with familiar company, and then you can buckle down and start doing the rest of the things I suggest. Or, I don't know, I did a lot out of spite, to be honest with you. I took it the negative way here and there, too. I'm just going to do it because nobody thinks I can, kind of thing. I still do that in certain areas now. I forget what they call that when you drive yourself onward for a negative reason, but it helps me for myself. And, you know, a lot of people aren't going to be able to have this. Most people don't have this. But it's something they put us into us in the Marines. We can't fail. We're not allowed to fail. I tell people if we come over a hill and there's two of us and 1,000 of the other guys, they're all well-armed and we got two sticks, I'm poking two eyes out before they kill us and they'll tell a great story about us. That's how the Marines think. They're going to remember we were here. I apply that to everything. Now, you can adopt that to your own life. You don't have to have been in the Marines to do it. Get your Irish up. That's an old one, but, you know, get ticked off. Refuse to be taken out by whatever. I'm sure a lot of people have overcome all kinds of stuff like that. If you don't have someone to help you, you might have to dig deep enough into yourself. It might just be you until you can grab a little bit more ground to operate from.
And with the social networks and Web 2.0 and the communities that we have online today, there is nothing that you can even imagine that you wouldn't be able to find supporters online to help you get through. Just
no, I never
want
to help my
going out and looking at them.
Yeah, the net's a godsend. You're not completely isolated. If you have no money, which is frequently the case for bipolar people, the library, and they all have them somewhere.
Yeah.
Or just find a friend that'll let you use their computer once in a while. It's tough. You got to get creative, and like I said, it's rough. You're not working with much. So I'd hope anyone listening to this would, you know, take those steps at least. Google, punch in alternative, anything holistic. It's a little sketchy because there's a lot of good stuff out there. Again, the Gordian knot. There's a lot of good information out there, and I experienced this myself. It's why I want people to do my system in the order I present it. There's a reason why I listed it as I did. You're not sure where to start and what's driving what. One of the biggest problems with bipolar in particular is a lot of people are addicts on top of it, either drunks or addicts or both. And you don't know which one's feeding the other, and it's because they're both feeding each other. The toxins you're taking in to fight your symptoms are feeding your symptoms. Your symptoms are driving you so crazy you're taking in toxins. How do you know which one? It's the chicken or the egg. Where do you start? Well, I answered that question. It's in my system. But what happens is people look for help. They try something. It doesn't work. they make a blanket assumption that that was bad information. No, you weren't ready for that part of the puzzle yet, or you picked a bad version of it. You were right in general, but then you got the wrong model car. Cars are good. You bought the wrong model. It's like that. I help people sort through that mess.
Well, and so we've got believe in yourself. We've got you need to have a why. We've got you got to have a support system. And then that brings us to the next part, which is you've got to have a system. And you've mentioned a couple of times so far today that you believe in having mentors, whether they're in person or whether they're on a telephone, in a book, whatever, you've got to have mentors. And those mentors can really help you to find a system that you can adopt. And sometimes when you're first finding someone else's system that you can use, you're kind of adopting it into your own life, kind of on blind faith. I have another student that I've been mentoring now for almost a full 3 years. And just recently, like in the last 2 or 3 weeks, he says on one call, you know, my big aha takeaway from today's call is that you should just listen to Gina and do everything she says, whether you agree with it, disagree with it, whether it makes sense or doesn't make sense. Just do it. Because by doing it, it will come clearer to you as to why, and it will begin making sense, and it works. And if you can just adopt it on blind faith, trust that the person whose system it is that created it would not steer you down a path that would have you, say, falling over a cliff or jumping off of a mountain, if you can do that, you really will start making more progress, which leads us to the last thing I've heard you say, and that is once you got all of those things, now you need to take action.
Yes. Yeah, you have to get moving and keep moving. You got to push through hurdles, and you have to keep track of your progress or lack of progress. You got to keep an eye on yourself, and you got to get a little systematic about it. You can't just wing it and try to keep it in the back of your mind, especially if you're bipolar. You don't have a back of the mind to keep it in, or it's cluttered, or the door's locked. So you have to track what's going on and try to make sense of it. The things I ask people to do, as you do them, not only do you start to feel better, but you start to get an understanding of what's going on, and this gives you power. You can start seeing results and tracking them. Good or bad, it's an answer. It's feedback, and then you know how to change from there. And then beyond that, two of the companies I work with that I wouldn't be without have their own support systems. I bounce between the two to figure out what might be going on, because either one of them alone, one's directly involved in what I do, but they don't have a take on it as expansive as mine. Because I knew without talking to them that my problem was larger than the part they handled, but I knew their part was the biggest part. And they didn't have answers for me. That led to the other company. They had no clue in specific how to help a bipolar person, but they knew how the mind worked. Between the two, I cobbled together a better answer for someone in my situation. And, so if you're bipolar, you're probably not going to be able to do that. Again, I don't know how I did it. I just was capable. I was almost too dumb to stop, kind of a thing.
Well, you know how they say necessity is the mother of invention. I think sometimes it's, look, I just got to find some relief from my problem. And if this has a piece and that has a piece, well, but effectively you've still created your own system, even if you're incorporating parts of something else. Because without those two elements, you know, and your particulars. And that's why nobody ever needs to be afraid of saying, well, just if you part of your what you teach is similar to something else or you incorporate something else, that doesn't make it bad or worthless or something that you shouldn't teach or share with others.
No, that was one of my fears when you and I started working. Well, first, I didn't believe I had a system because I couldn't see the forest for the trees. I was so busy living it, I'd never broken down what happened. It just slowly became part of my life. I didn't understand what I was even doing.
I kind of helped you realize what it was.
Yeah. That was one of our larger arguments. And then one of the other ones was almost, I was like, this isn't mine. I found other people doing these different parts, and I just rolled them into what I do. How can I say this is mine and you got me to see because the whole thing is yours. They didn't put all that together. They've each got their own spot, but I accumulated it all and condensed it into my version, a cumulative approach.
Yeah, it's like
in.
How when you make bread, you take some yeast and some flour and water and a couple of other things, and you make bread, and you couldn't have the bread without, if something was taken out of it, it would alter it completely.
Nope. Thank goodness I listened to you eventually. Rhonda took about 3 weeks. 3 weeks of very close attention. and hitting me with a metaphorical stick until I got it. But something told me she was to be listened to, even though I couldn't see it. But yeah, you gotta have a system, and I've realized over time everything I write about, I'm basically just regurgitating my life on the paper or the screen, with my take on what my life means to me and why it's going like it is, why I want it to go like it goes, what happens when it doesn't, and you know, on and on. I think that's what most people do. But a lot of people either don't have the want or maybe the ability to take that witness perspective, stepping back and watching the show that is them take place. And that's something everybody needs to learn how to do. You need to watch yourself go, like a third party. Just watch what you do in a day. Don't even pick it apart. Just keep an eye on it. Then at the end of the day, you don't even decide if what you did was right or wrong, good or bad. That's like a game we play in our heads to categorize everything that happens in our life. It's our understanding of things. Life is just life. It goes on regardless. That's hard for some people to accept, but it is what it is. Nothing means anything until we put a value on it. It just happened. So you look at your life that way, and at the end, all you want to know is, did today and the things I did in it help me reach my goals? If not, something's got to change. If so, something should be expanded upon, or at least continued. That's where you got to start making the distinctions. And like I say, you got to take it easy on yourself. Everybody makes horrendous mistakes. Everyone's got something in their closet they do not want anyone to find out about. I wrote about a lot of my stuff, and I had to get good with things. A lot of people don't, because a lot of my junk's public. But there's other things that are going to stay firmly locked in the vault, and that's that, because they can't come out for all kinds of different reasons. But that's, I think, most people, too. There's things you just are not okay with other people knowing, and it wouldn't serve any purpose to have things come out. But don't swim in guilt or shame over these things. I did that for years. I persecuted myself for decades over certain things, and I mean persecuted. It's part of what fueled my illness. At some point, you got to just figure we're even. The universe or life, whatever. I think I've done this long enough. The only way you can make it good with the world is to stop being so hard on yourself and get proactive about doing something. You can't. There's friendships and relationships you can't fix in some cases. You ruined it. They're done. Someone's hurt. Maybe they're going to hate you forever. You can't fix that. Sometimes you can, but a lot of times you can't. Don't eat that for the rest of your life, because now you're not being respectful of your chance to do something better with it by trying to do something better about it. Just be better to the next friend than you were to that last one. And that's how you honor the old friendship you lost, by trying to be a better person to the next person.
Well, and everything you just said, I heard a couple more things we've got to add to the list of steps to do. So we've got believe in yourself, we've got find your why, get a support system, then we have you need a system. And in that system, one of the things that I heard you talk about just now had to do with goals and asking yourself, did this, what you did today, help you reach your goals? Well, that presumes that one of the first steps of the system is defining what your goals are. Because if you don't define those goals, asking yourself if what you did today helped you meet your goals, well, who knows if you don't first start with designing those goals. And the systems that I teach people to use to build businesses, the very first step is your last, and that is deciding what the long-term outcome is going to be. And then work your way backwards to figure out what steps need to be taken to get there, and take all of those steps and turn them into shorter-term goals, so that every single day, if you're using my system of growing a business, you're actually focused on getting a certain number of gold stars for having achieved smaller, shorter-term goals really quickly. So every day you should get a series of gold stars, and then tomorrow you should get some more gold stars. And all of those gold stars combine into reaching one of the bigger, longer-term goals. And I hear you were saying that that's really what you did, and that it was really an important part of what you did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard a good analogy. An airplane gets from New York to Los Angeles, not in a straight line. It has to make constant corrections on a very tiny scale as it goes along, or it'll end up way off the mark across distance.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to do. But if you leave the airport in New York and don't know where you're going, how do you know how to correct as you go? So, yeah. Yeah, I skipped over that, so I'm glad you brought that up. You got to have goals, and then you brought up something very critical, too. This is one. When you bring up the goal of overcoming bipolar, that's ginormous. It's already ludicrous, and I've already lost certain people. They don't want to hear anything out of me because I'm an idiot. I try to catch them in time if someone's like that. I try to tell them, look, you go a step at a time, and you chunk it out. That's how I call it, and you just said it. Get the big goal. What little goals is it going to stack up to make the big goal happen, and start picking apart those little goals? And I tell people, keep it as small and doable as possible. Eat the elephant one bite at a time. Don't try to eat the whole thing on one loaf of bread. It's big. And you bring it down to a scale that's manageable for you, and just start picking apart the things that you feel in your heart you got a shot at fixing. If you don't know where you're going, how do you correct as you move along?
You got it. I mean, that plane going from New York to L.A. is off course more than 90% of the trip. And yet still reaches its destination every single time. It's not going to end up in Tennessee or Dallas or Vancouver, British Columbia. It's still going to end up in L.A. every single time. And it's the same exact way with your goals.
And no matter what happens, keep forward momentum building. That combines the act of not judging yourself too harshly. You're going to screw some things up as you move along, and you're like, what was I thinking? What's wrong with me? That was hideous that I just did or said that. It's not all, you know, and this pertains to everything, not just business or overcoming your health issues, just anything. You'll just be confounded that you just did something so terribly wrong. Don't, you know, soak in that a minute if you must, maybe a day, and then, you know, just vow to correct it next time. And it's something else. You wanna keep moving. You gotta have these goals. Definitely. You don't want to just blindly move along, because then you're not getting anywhere. You're just a bunch of mindless activity. But when it goes wrong, which it will forever, don't stop. Trip, pick yourself up and keep moving. I was telling Rhonda, again, I don't know how much of my past year people would believe happened the way it happened, because it practically defies reality. Just in general, I'll tell you a general thing about a specific event. We went to a business meeting with some very powerful people. My partner and I, this whole separate business I'm doing, we're a startup company. We're not much beyond an idea right now, although we have connection to many of the physical parts and the players that are going to help us build it. We're not much beyond paper right now. But we have a good plan. It's well thought out. And we were going to pitch in front of a bunch of millionaires who together were somewhere near the billion-dollar mark in one room. We knew we weren't going to get any money that day, but we needed to be known, and we had 1 minute to tell them what our deal was. Before we went to go up, some other gentleman who we'd never heard of went up. Same plan, well-developed, already has fueled through a $2 million grant the state gave him, has physical plants in operation, has not the exact same product we want to make, but something very similar with props, and wanted, you know, a whole lot more money than we were going to ask for. And then he sat down. And my partner and I looked at each other, and, you know, I could almost hear his mind, and I know he could hear mine. What the? Where'd this guy come from? And now we felt like we're going to look like little children compared to what he's established, because we thought we had really had something. Well, when we went up on the podium and talked, we did great. Everybody liked us anyway, and in this room of these people, they knew what we were. They were impressed that we stood up and talked and that we spoke well. They knew we were nothing business-wise compared to anybody else in that room. We were the youngest company. Now, we give it a whirl. One of the other companies in the room that was supposed to support us didn't when he went up to speak on his turn, and we don't know why. That's just the politics of people in business. Never did find out why. Now, a month later, we have another business meeting with a similar group of people, if anything, stronger, more powerful. I was in a country club. It just blew my mind. I've never been in a country club. This was phenomenal. I want to be in them more. Anyway, that same gentleman that had the props in, already got money from the state and everything, he approached me. He had heard us speak. He has a reason why he wants to go a certain way with his company, and he wanted to work with us, not compete against us. And that was completely out of left field. And he's already, you know, he's in a much better position than us, well-established, and he needs our help. And we need his help. So here, there's my thing. We thought he was competition, and we've run into this a few times now. When we went to get the land for our business, somebody was already on it doing what we were going to propose to the landowner. Thankfully, they were not doing it as well as we are going to. They did not think it out already as far as we've thought it out. Now, we beat out that competition that was already on site. We were going to go after some raw material we needed, a very large amount from our city. This guy who owned the land already has it. I got that contract. This all happened in the first 4 minutes of conversation. So as far as we know now, our entire plan has just been dashed against the shores of despair. We're like, what are we going to do? Again, we kept cool. We're like, well, that was everything. This guy, we just lost everything. We haven't even gotten under negotiating terms. Turns out, we got the land anyway. We're doing a better job with the little we have than the guy that was already established. The guy that was already established, we reached out to him. He likes us better than his own plan. He wants to work with us, and he's a professional marketer. Now we don't have to pay for a professional marketer. So this is you see what I'm saying? You just keep moving. Do the best you can. Stay faithful to your plan. And you'd be surprised at what might turn up if you just keep your cool. Just keep moving forward sensibly and deal with problems as they happen rather than overreacting. People work too much from emotion. Emotion can't think straight. It's the opposite of thinking straight. I learned that too. You got to get your emotions under control or you'll never get anything done right.
Really great job on that. That was really well said. So, Rhonda, what else do we want Ken to share with our listeners today?
Well, gosh, I mean, you've shared a lot of fantastic things about your story, and there's something that I would like to highlight from the things that you're saying, as it's all very true about the why and the goal setting and the strategy and getting back from your emotions and not just ruling everything on emotion. And all of those things are very much a part of it. There's a piece of it that I'm really wanting to highlight. Now, here is somebody in Ken Jensen who is a guy who had a lot of really tough things going on. You had everything inside of you working against you by virtue of the fact of the bipolar disorder. Now you are a successful business owner and opportunities and things are coming to you that you maybe didn't specific go out and call to each of these, but it's because of being open and realizing that sometimes you don't see all the steps on your path. It's like when you go outside at night. I live in the country and it's real dark and there's not a lot of street lights. And imagine you go out with a flashlight. Or even if you're driving in a car in a lonely stretch of road at night and your headlights of the car only illuminate a little bit ahead on the path, and there's a lot beyond, you know that the road is still there. The road isn't going to just vanish on you or something like that. The road is still there, but you can't see it. And yet you continue to move through in faith and realize that you're going to get to your destination. And that's a lot of what's going on with you, is these things have come to you because of, yes, the why and the goals and the planning and all those things, but also because you've had this sense of openness and a little sense of adventure that, wow, what something fun could just be happening, and wouldn't it just be really neat for things to work out? And that you have kept that open expectancy for good things instead of having an expectancy for the sky is falling and it's all going to come crashing down. I'd love for you to speak a little bit to that.
Okay. Yeah, you have to stay open. I had mentioned that earlier. You stay open and receptive while not being naive at the same time or overly excited, and which then would lead to acting on emotion instead of ration. I have a picture. I'm looking at it right now on my office wall. It's something I drummed up just messing around with a printing program. I wanted to see how it would come out. I had a friend did a line drawing of just me off the my book cover, just me with the cigar, looking all Arnold here. And I love it. And it says, believe in who you are, and you will become what you believe. It's really that simple. If you think something is one way or the other, good or bad, it either will become so, or you will structure your day to prove yourself right. Either way, same result.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe you're going to make it, this isn't the same as defying the facts as they currently are. It's not that. It's not that you're like being, you know, ignorant of what's taking place, but you're aware that it can change. So you deal with whatever your current circumstances are now with a mind towards bettering them. So your antenna are always up. And I have been doing that constantly. You have to gain greater awareness of yourself and your part in the life you're leading. That's also something I teach. It's one of my steps. You can't just, most people, regardless of where you're at or why, are on autopilot. They built up a way of living through life that's comfortable, because most humans crave homeostasis. We don't like hills and valleys. We like the plains, nice and easy going. You develop a life that allows nice and easy going. Even if it's a little uncomfortable, it's doable. And you don't know what to do when you hit a valley, and you don't know how to climb a hill. You got to be open to changes as they present themselves, and they might require going down or up. You're still walking along because that's how you've structured your life, and it has to stay that way until you have a better plan, especially if it's work or family related. You can't just up and change everything and go on your grand mission of being a new you. That's not what I'm saying. But you work in these little extras wherever you find them. And to find them, it goes back to setting goals. Once you know what your goals are, you attune yourself to looking for the things in your day that will help these goals come to life. And like you just said with the road analogy, they're right there. Your answers, in most cases, you've been driving by them or talking to them every day or being shown them, and you don't even know it, because you're looking at your life from the position of a person would who has a life like yours. You now want a different life, so you have to look at life different. The answers are not so much out there. Really, they're in you. It's you. It comes with that first big change. And when you make that change, and I had it happen to me, the world seems to change like magic before your eyes. It will blow you away because you're aware of it. And it dawns on you, nothing's changed. I haven't even changed where I go in a day or who I see, but nothing looks the same. People start seeming to change before your eyes because you're not listening to them the way you always did. You find some of your friends, they got to go. They're not a help. They're a hindrance. Or they shouldn't get as much of your time as possible. Other people, you didn't talk to them the way you should for them to take you serious, and you need their help. You have to up your game. That's kind of like what I said when I met Rhonda, and I was just this pretty one-track kind of thinking guy, and I didn't know how to be what I thought was more tame or, you know, less scary, because to me that equaled weak, and I couldn't tolerate being perceived as weak. I had to change to understand that's not weakness, it's better, and I had to find the people that could help me figure out how to do it. So that's the biggest thing, I think, being aware. And once you become aware, then comes the action. Like, geez, I think that guy could help me. And stepping out on faith, going over and shaking a hand and saying hi. I learned a little trick. You talk about relationship marketing. When I came out of seclusion, I had been at the end of my illness, and as I was getting better, I had locked myself away for 2 years. All I did was deal with my symptoms because they were so strong. I could not deal with life. People did not know what to make of me, and I looked scary. I looked unhealthy. I looked sick, scary. and like I wanted to share it with people. My only thought was to deal with my pain, smoke cigarettes in an attempt to get some kind of relief, and not hurt anybody. That was my goals each and every day. I didn't know why I was alive. I couldn't figure why my heart kept beating because it was pointless. As I came out of that, I got back into the gym. Now, I've always been physically fit all my life. When I came out of this reclusive situation, I was 300 pounds. Everything hurt. I was in terrible shape, and now I'm back in the gym. There's nothing more ego-based than being in the gym, especially with a background like mine. I was horrified. I was terrified. I felt so weak and small and self-conscious, but I stepped out in faith, and I had goals to get back in shape. It was not fun, but I gutted it out because I knew I was in shape once before, and I could get it back again. I was in my, mid to late 30s at this point. And I started getting back in shape, and as I started feeling better, I knew I had to work on my people skills. So I said hi to everybody in the gym, and they teach you this in business courses. You write a little something on the business card that they just hand to you as soon as they walk away so you remember who they were for future reference, because you'll forget. I would write in my logbook for training who the person was, what they looked like, some little thing they said about their story so I'd remember it, and I'd bring it up in conversation so they'd know I was paying attention. I did that just to learn how to be social again because I had forgotten. You do not know that it's a skill set to interact with other people until something like bipolar removes it from you, and you do not know how to be. It is a freaky, freaky feeling. People don't understand you. Your words are not taken the way you mean them, and you don't get where they're coming from. It is bizarre, and you don't know you have it till it's gone. That developed into, basically, networking. I say hi to everybody. Everyone in the gym, and it's a large gym, loves me. I remember facts about everybody. I know everyone by first name, and they're hurt when they can't remember my name, and I almost feel bad for them because they don't know I'm cheating. When I see someone coming, if I got time, I quick grab the line. Who is that? Oh, I can't remember that guy. And I look in the book. Oh, that's Bill. Hey, Bill, how you doing? I seem like some kind of rock star that knows everybody. I don't know everybody. I'm looking in the book. But they think I do, and now I've developed some very nice business contacts with some very powerful people in the gym. And I've made friends with people I never thought would be my friends because I don't judge them the way I used to. I judged people from the mindset of a guy that was an animal like I used to be or hard-edged. Now I judge people differently, and I wouldn't even say judging. I meet people with an open expectancy to see if they have something of value to me, and I also do it, and this is very important, I need to know I can give them something in return, and if possible, give that value to them first, large or small. I found as soon as I became a resource for people, they'll fall over themselves to help you in return. Right. Now, this is like a tactic, except it eventually becomes a lifestyle. It's no longer a tactic for me. It is, because in reality, I need help with different things. I need your help. I'm going to do something for you, so maybe you'll feel compelled to do it. It's turned into, I just feel better knowing that I'm this way. I like knowing that people can count on me and use me for things, and I'm willing to do it because in a lot of cases, I have no specific thing I want out of that other person. I just like them. I want to give them a hand. If I can fit it in and it doesn't take away too much of my time with what I'm doing on my larger goals, I'll help them because I've learned, as I said, this last year, things just start falling out of the sky like magic, and it's from being this way.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing all that. It's been...
Excuse me?
Go ahead, Rhonda.
Did we lose Rhonda?
I don't know. I heard the rooster crow.
I heard the rooster. The rooster must have chewed through the line.
Must have. I said, I heard her say, well, it's been, and then I don't know where she went. We've got about 7 more minutes, and I'm hoping she comes back online.
Yeah, these things happen on these calls.
Sometimes.
It's funny. I was so terrified to start any of this way back when it was just me writing the book. My family told me for over 2 years that my turnaround was so profound, it'd be a sin to keep it to myself. Other people need to know what you know. And I finally agreed to do the book. I spent money I should have spent on something else, and I was terrified because it was one more time out of many, 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 many dozens that I spent money on something I didn't know if it was going to be folly or a ripoff. And I just stepped out on faith one last time with my last ounce of money that had kind of popped in out of thin air. And led me to Rhonda. And then I was scared. It's so funny. You can be scared of different things. I lived through missile attacks over in the Gulf, and I've been attacked by gangs because of security jobs I had where it was one against five. I've been in a lot of life-threatening situations. I walked out of car crashes nobody should have walked out of. On and on and on. Nothing scared me like starting this book and putting it live online and getting people's feedback. That was almost too much to consider.
And how well was it received when you did that?
Well, the first version was still too rough. I wrote the book in 3 weeks because the whole story's been in my head forever. And then Rhonda read it, and I had not put enough in about the system and beef that out enough to explain it better, why I came up with my system and how it works. So I fluffed out the back end of my life story at that point. Then a lot of stuff, I didn't realize a lot of stuff that was second nature to me needed explanation to others, and I couldn't see what that might be until people started telling me different things about the book. So I added in these little, like, asides on the ends of most of the chapters to explain why I just shared. I shared a lot of things in my story that people just, they thought at first maybe I was bragging or pointless or what's he sharing all this violence for, this scary stuff. And I'd have to put an aside saying this led to the illness. I only told parts of my story that I think directly helped the illness flare up. So it took me about a year before the book you can now get on Amazon appeared in the form that it is. And, yeah.
So in addition to the book, do you have any other products of your own?
No, not yet. Not yet. Right now I just offer consultancy to people. People come and see me, and they pay me for my opinion on things or to help them structure a very specific plan for helping someone they care about take on their bipolar. And then I stay in contact with people by phone. But, you know, like I said, that's where I'm paid as a consultant. So no more other products.
And they can find you at ittakesgutstobeme.com.
No, that was my old site.
Oh, that's what Rhonda's got in here, so give me the right site.
it's bipolardisordersurvivor.com, with or without the dashes, or B as in boy, D as in David, survivor.com. That'll get them there, too. If anybody goes to It Takes Guts, that'll get them there, too. I redirected that site because a lot of people still have that information.
Gotcha. Okay, so bipolardisordersystem.com.
Yeah,
right?
bipolardisordersurvivor.com.
Survivor.com. Gotcha. Bipolardisordersurvivor.com.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, I am there now myself. Rhonda says Skype kicked her off the show, and that's why she's not back yet, but she'll be right back in here in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, I did it, you know. That's the strongest thing I can tell people. I'm not who I once was, and I'm no longer sick. Bipolar simply is not part of my life and hasn't been. It's been about 4.5 years now since I've been on any medication, and no bipolar. And I've also learned some of the symptoms people have. A doctor would want to treat you with medication. Some symptoms, some reactions you have to life are normal. You don't need a medication. Certain things happen in your life that are bad enough, anybody'd freak out. They're just so handy to hand out a pill anymore in response to everything, and the pharmaceutical industry pushes so hard for that response. It's the whole system has to be revamped or mostly done away with because, and you know, it's their answer to anything. And that's hideous. They're going right by the basics. Doctors have barely any training in nutrition. I've sat with more doctors and had to convince them on the basics of how you feed a body and how it works nutritionally, and they're not listening. Some do.
Right.
I've had some very good doctors, but they were in the minority.
Have you heard my story, Ken?
No, I haven't, although I knew you were dealing with something pretty harsh.
Well, I wish we had time to share it, but I had 10 years that I spent in a hospital bed in a wheelchair. Almost died in 2005. Docs basically said I had 12 to 18 months to live. I had a car accident that led to a back surgery, and the first back surgery gave me one of those incurable infections, those super bugs you hear about on the news.
Okay. Wow.
And from that, spent 10 years on too many antibiotics, including experimental IV antibiotics, that then caused yet another infection, this time a yeast infection, fungal infection, that got into my heart, my lungs, and my blood, and it was going to my brain. And to convince my doctors that what I was doing, using alternative types of things, not medicine, not drugs, that convincing them that that was the right way to go just was impossible, literally impossible. They
exactly.
wanted me staying on my $40,000 worth of drugs every month because they'd make money from it.
And they'll tell you, they'll use fear. I have loved ones now I'm desperately trying to help that even understand they're death afraid to step away from their medications. And I tell people, you don't. If you do what I did, you're not going to just step away. There's a very specific plan, very individualized,
right.
And I don't set that up. And I tell everyone, tell your doctor what you're doing.
Yeah.
Don't just say, screw medication. That's very dangerous. But, you know, you're looking to remove it as the end goal in most cases. Some medications for different things are probably going to stay. But it, just for me, regarding bipolar, but I know in a larger sense, it's you don't have a lithium lack. Your body's not craving Seroquel or different things. You know, there's some other problem, and those are just patching. It's like having your engine light on your car go off for oil. And you turned the bulb off so the bright red glare no longer annoys you. You didn't fix the problem. You just got rid of the symptom.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Well, again, you can find Ken's book at bipolardisordersurvivor.com.
Yes.
And Rhonda, who do we have with us next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Relationship Marketing 101 on Blog Talk Radio?
Well, next week we have someone who is not only a PR expert, but she involves your social media and your PR. We have Smokin' Hot PR, that's how she's known on Twitter, Tatjana Gunn. I'm very excited to have her with us. The week after that, we have John Hertran, author of The Power Pause, best-selling author.
I can't wait.
I know, April is an amazing month, and then we have another media-related guest. I mean, it's just going to be a fabulous entire month of April here on Relationship Marketing. Ken, you've been a treasure. Thank you so much. I mean, we're running over. This is such a good show. So,
thank you very
and
much.
What a way to kick the month off. So thank you.
I'm glad
so
I started
much.
It. That's the old me, Rhonda. I'm proud.
Start.
I was first.
You are. You're absolutely first in April and so excited to bring you to our show. But, you know, if people took half as much action as you did, and most people have no reason like you did that could keep them back or get in their way like bipolar disorder can, you know, people can really rock out their lives and their businesses just by setting some goals, taking some action, and continuing to move forward even though you can't see the entire cross-country road trip ahead of you.
We all have it in us to do something great, and great doesn't have to mean size. Great, if somebody else thinks it's great, it was great. It could be just
for
making
anyone listening to the show live or listening to this on the recording version of it, really listen to this message that Ken has, because if Ken can accomplish all that he has with it, having the bipolar disorder, anyone can achieve anything if they put their mind to it, really find their why, and take a little action.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you again, Ken. It's been a phenomenal show. If there's ever anything I can do to serve you, just let me know. I'd be happy to help in any way that I can.
I will take you up on that.
Fantastic.
For me, thank you so much, Gina. I'm glad you got to meet Ken, who's just a dear person and a real treasure. And thank you so much for being on the show.
And we will be back next Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio. For another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University, www.directionsu.com, for passion, empowered results.